The initial idea was that we were wanting to build artificial intelligence employees for physical retail locations, having a physical presence. We kind of colloquially referred to it as holograms. So we were trying to build holographic employees for retail environments. And we used a transparent OLED display to render the first version of this AI employee.
Hey everyone, welcome to Brains Behind AI, a show where we meet the innovators, entrepreneurs, and the real brains behind some of the most successful AI startups. We ask them about their journey from coming up with the idea to finding the product market fit, and from their experience, draw a set of principles that we can take away to ours. This is your host, Ari. Thank you for spending time with us. And now, let the show begin. Hello and welcome to another episode of Brains Behind AI. Today we have a very special guest, Rob Carpenter, the CEO and founder of Valiant AI, an enterprise-grade conversational AI platform for quick-serve restaurants. Valiant has developed a software application that integrates within a restaurant's existing hardware infrastructure and allows the AI software to take the vast majority of customer orders and insert them directly into the point of sale for the payments. Rob has a master's degree in business administration with a specialization in enterprise technology management. He was named one of the top 25 most influential young professionals in Colorado by Colorado Biz magazine. And in 2016, he received the Denver Trailblazer Award. So Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
So Rob, before we dive into the company, I just want to take a minute to understand sort of how you got into AI. What got you interested in AI? Were you always a programmer, developer, or is that something you developed as you sort of grew up?
No, I'm on the business management side. I don't think I'm smart enough to be a programmer. So I just like to hire people that are a lot more intelligent than I am. So my background is more from kind of a pure entrepreneurship, you know, trajectory, I'll say. I looked at all of the people that were doing the things and living the kind of life that I wanted to when I was young. And the vast majority of them were entrepreneurs that had built and sold companies. And around that time, somebody introduced me to Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that really just kind of opened my mind to the possibilities in life, that it's not necessarily get a degree, get a job, clock in, clock out, you know, maybe get a pension, retire, you know, kind of a lifestyle, and that you could really take control of your life and do the things that you're passionate about. And it's been, although a chaotic journey at time, I think ultimately a very exciting and rewarding journey in entrepreneurship. So initially I started a custom software development company where we built mobile applications for other people. Whenever I meet and talk to other entrepreneurs, especially people that want to start companies, I highly recommend they start service-based businesses. They're really easy to get off the ground. They are labor intensive, but if you work really hard, you can generally beat out your competition and you can carve out a nice lifestyle and nice business for yourself. What a lot of people, usually in the 3 to 6 year timeframe, start to realize is that although service-based companies are quicker and easier to start, they're a treadmill and you're constantly running and, you know, you're only eating what you kill, and it's a constant turnover process of your customers, and it's ultimately exhausting. And so I think ultimately, like a lot of people in service-based businesses, eventually I realized I wanted to start a product-based company. They tend to be harder to get off the ground, but once they're up and running, they tend to be far more lucrative. And ultimately, they can be easier to run because your product is earning revenue for you, theoretically, while you sleep or while you're on vacation, and you don't have to constantly be out selling. And I think that's what really kind of attracted me to the idea. And ultimately, I just like to think that I'm a bit of a futurist and a nerd. And so I knew I wanted to get into some sort of kind of forward-facing future technology. And I think artificial intelligence is kind of that perfect middle ground for me of kind of all available opportunities.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of value packed in what you just said here. And I really like, I think there is this common misconception that you have to be and data scientist and engineer from Google to go build and start an artificial intelligence company, which you're definitely proving is not the right sort of assumption. As a matter of fact, you can be a business guy, futuristic, who's looking into where the world is going and can come in and build. Right? You don't need the technology background. Love that. And then I also love the fact that you started as a service company and then sort of transitioned into a product, because I like what you just said there, right? Because one, as a service company, you're making revenue, you have some money coming in the door while you're spending time with the customer, where you're learning about what are the gaps in the market, what do they really need. So when you come up with a product, you're just right going back in to fill in that gap with that experience being there on the ground with the customer. So I like that, yeah.
There's so many wonderful things that can come out of running a service-based business. I mean, to your point, you learn how to communicate and interact with customers. You learn how to sell customers. Obviously, you have to work hard, but you also do some other things. You carve out freedom for yourself. You're not clocking into a 9-to-5 job. You're running your own company, and that gives you the flexibility to think about new ideas, explore new opportunities. You know, a lot of people, I think, that build and run service-based companies, you know, can do a good job of starting to carve out a nice lifestyle for themselves. They can start to make good money. And then you can use that money plus all the connections and networks that you build in the process of starting your service-based company to then go and start a product-based company. I was very fortunate that when I came up with the idea for Valiant, within a few months, I was able to raise $1 million to launch the company. If I was just starting my career and I hadn't run my service-based company, there was no way I could have raised that $1 million. I mean, $250,000 of it right out of the gate came from investors that I actually had in my service-based business. And then the other $750,000 came from the network that I had developed during that time or introductions from those investors. And so it really gave me this nice springboard. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, they get a little too focused on my first company needs to be the next Google or Uber or Facebook. And that's just not true. In fact, there's been a bunch of studies that have been done, and they show that the number one predictor of being able to start a billion-dollar company is having previously started another company and had some sort of an exit where they netted, let's say, over $1 million from a sale. So I think it's important for people not to feel like you have to shoot the moon right out of the gate. You know, start with a nice business, build it, learn, build your network, build your connections. Maybe you can sell the company. Maybe you can merge with somebody. Maybe you can bring somebody in to run it for you. And then use that as a launch pad and a springboard to go start your billion-dollar company.
Yeah, no, again, another great point here. What I've seen is when we tell our stories, we tell it from one success to another success. And we kind of sort of, and it's, I think it's general sort of a human sort of a way of narrating a story where we say we did this and then this happened and then we jumped to something bigger and then something bigger happened and boom. And I think people like to hear stories like that. But what I've seen, and to your point, 100%, right? Even the ones that are super successful and have built billion-dollar brands have a fair share of experiences of building something small, scaling, and also experience trying something that didn't work, right? And then building on top of the failures and things that didn't work.
A good example of that are the founders of Angry Birds. I forget the statistic, but I want to say that was their 54th game that they had built and launched. And so prior to that, they had had 53 games that didn't work out. But it taught them a lot and it positioned them to eventually be successful. So whether it's a service-based business or you go right to trying to launch a product-based company, even if it's not perfect out of the gate, even if it doesn't work, you still learn so much through that process that can then ultimately make your other businesses more successful. And again, that goes back to the idea of don't try to wait for the perfect thing. You just need to do it. Just get in, just start a business, just get in the process. Maybe it fails, maybe it's mildly successful, maybe it's really successful. But either way, that experience is going to set you up for another company if you truly are chasing, you know, running a billion-dollar company someday.
Great, great advice. Coming over to Valiant, right? How did you come up with that idea? Where did you see the need or the gap? How did that idea emerge?
Yeah, so the initial idea was that we were wanting to build artificial intelligence employees for physical retail locations, having a physical presence. We kind of colloquially referred to it as holograms. So we were trying to build holographic employees for retail environments. And we used a transparent OLED display to render the first version of this AI employee. And we really at the time thought voice AI was a solved problem. But when we integrated what at the time I think was a pretty cutting edge and cool visual interaction with this sort of holographic employee, the actual voice interaction was terrible. And we realized, and this was 2017, that the off-the-shelf technology worked for something really simple, like telling Alexa to turn off your lights. But it didn't work for carrying on a fluid conversation like you might with an employee to place an order. And so we really had to pivot the business, put the visual elements of the hologram on hold, and just double down and focus on building an enterprise-grade conversational AI platform.
Yeah. No, it's, by the way, the hologram idea sounds really cool. I can totally envision Tupac or Nerd Biggie, Notorious B.I.G., serving me my McDonald's as I show up at the drive-thru.
Or what about Spider-Man?
You know, yeah, or Spider-Man, yes.
Or my daughter, she's a huge fan of Frozen. So imagine if you could walk in and she could order her Happy Meal from Anya.
Yeah, that's cool. But eventually it seems like you navigated towards the voice, where a conversational AI where you can put the order in and an order goes through this sort of the point of sale system and gets logged, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So what we realized is that if we were going to make this holographic employee ever work, voice AI would have to work first. What we were surprised to learn that I didn't necessarily know as a lay consumer is that prior to the pandemic, 70% of all fast food business ran through the drive-thru. Now that number is closer to 90%. So you have this, in a way, perfect environment where it's audio only, and due to the massive labor shortage right now, there's a huge need to be able to start automating tasks inside of restaurants. So it was really kind of the perfect confluence of preparation and hard work and then just getting lucky. And, you know, I think a lot of times when you look at the people that have gotten really successful, you know, you hear Mark Cuban talk about it, they'll be honest and they'll just be like, look, I got lucky at the end of the day. And I think it's a similar situation here.
Yeah, it's preparation meets opportunity. Let's talk about the timeline. When did you have the first launch? Was it an MVP? When did you start?
Yeah, so I initially had the idea for the company in October of 2016, and then I officially launched Valiant in February of 2017. A gentleman named Ben Thelker, who was the chief technology officer for my custom software development company, my first company, when I had the idea, I told him about it. He thought it was pretty cool. And we started brainstorming and discussing it. And he agreed to work on a prototype. So he took kind of the fall and winter of 2016 to prototype it out. We used that and kind of going back to the entrepreneurial journey. We showed that early prototype to friends and family. We were able to raise an initial kind of small round of 50,000. We pitched it to everybody as a lottery ticket. You know, don't put your life savings into this, but put a little money in. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. And then we use that 50,000 to build a very, very rudimentary prototype of this holographic employee that just sort of conveyed the idea we were going after. And then we were able to use that to then raise that $1 million. So, you know, we got things going probably in, I'd say, March of 2017 was when we brought in the 50,000. And then by summer of 2017, we raised $1 million. And we've been very fortunate to be backed by a lot of wonderful investors that we've been able to continue to raise money over the last several years while we've just continued to work day in and day out on building this enterprise-grade conversational AI technology.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And tell me what it was like to get your first customer, and maybe if you can talk about who the first customer was. And again, if you don't want to say the name, that's okay. How was your experience getting your first customer for the software?
So the first customer that we onboarded to our technology was called Good Times. They're a burger restaurant out in Denver, Colorado. I want to say they've got about 32 locations. It's a double drive-through, so it's sort of a longer, skinnier building, and then there's drive-through lanes on either side of the building, very similar to a Checkers and Rally's, if anybody has been to one of those restaurants before. And we sat down, you know, with the CEO, and this was probably now mid-2018. So it took us a year, year and a half before we had a restaurant that was willing to pilot this technology with us. And at that time, the labor shortage in hospitality was already up to about 800,000 positions that were open. So the labor pains were already pretty acute, prior to the start of the pandemic. And they agreed to let us put it into their restaurant and prototyped it. Like a lot of AI systems, we had it backed up with call center. And in those early days, you know, the AI was probably only completing 5% of orders by itself, with a heavy amount, you know, 95% being call center, you know, assisting in getting those orders done. And we used to joke with the person who was in our office who was backing up and doing that call center work that it was like they were trying to fly a plane while we were building it simultaneously, and we were all trying to keep it from crashing on any given day. So a tremendous amount of appreciation to Good Times during that time for working with us and helping us out. So we actually launched the product in October of 2018, and we were the first company to actually ever get this technology into market. And then we've just been continuing to grind and refine and iterate and improve since then. And we're now to a point where the technology is actually starting to propagate into the market. And so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I'm sure pandemic has helped, if anything, accelerated, right? The work you're doing. So now you sort of just going through the story, right? You found your first customer, they're using it, you're still building it out. Where did you go from there? And like, before we actually go there, what are some of the challenges? Because I can clearly see that this is no easy undertaking, because there's so many moving pieces, rules, engines that you may need to align it to, menu and all that, right? The voice. What were some of the key challenges you saw?
I wish there was just a couple of challenges that we could distill it down into, but there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of challenges related to trying to launch this type of technology. Everything from the physical on-premise sort of hardware challenges. For example, there's no way to get audio off-premise, so we had to build our own hardware. Microphones have issues, wires are degraded, loud background noise, POS integration problems, you name it. So all of the AI challenges. Speech-to-text is very much not a solved problem. So there's massive amounts of work that have to be done there. The NLP systems that we tested were not fast or responsive enough or able to handle multiple intents. So we had to build one from scratch. And then the rules and logic engine, you're really, you know, POS terminals, the digital cash registers in restaurants, those are hard enough to start. But now you essentially need to give a POS terminal a brain. And so you have to have a whole logic engine that basically understands absolutely everything that a point of sale system understands. And then you have to package both the physical and the digital and human psychology all into a package that can respond back to a customer in the drive-through in 1 to 2 seconds. So it's a very, very hard problem to solve. And a lot of companies have come and gone and failed in this space.
Yeah. So as you sort of solve this, how big are you now? How big have you gotten today?
Yeah, so our team currently has 22 people. We have 8 open positions right now. So we're looking to be at 30 by next month. If anybody's listening to this, I'll make my one plug. We are looking for talented engineers or people that are really excited about the world of AI and want to get in on something that, you know, I think has massive potential when you look at a market opportunity of starting to automate entry-level basic customer service. And then I would assume probably by the end of the year, we would be closer to 50 people.
Very cool. Very impressive. In terms of funding and VC, where are you? Are you doing Series B? How is that sort of piece going? Because I know as an entrepreneur, that's also a continuous full-time job in the startup world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, as I mentioned, we've been really fortunate to have really good backers. We've raised $10.5 million to date, and we'll be announcing another raise in the future.
Cool. Very impressive. Now, sort of as we talk about the future, right, where do you see this technology going to? Let's just say, put it 3 years out, where would Valiant be, or where would this conversational AI order placing be?
In 5 years, I would assume Valiant would have probably about 10,000 restaurants running our voice AI technology. I think we will have these digital holographic employees live in a couple of different industries. I think there'll have been some market consolidation, so we'll have likely acquired a few other voice AI companies along the way. And I think we'll be looking for opportunities in new markets.
Are you looking or thinking about sort of down the road, 3 to 5 years, grow out of the quick service restaurants? Or do you want to go sort of do more in that space? I just want to understand, as a CEO and an entrepreneur, is your strategy go deeper or is it strategy go broader?
Right now, we are hyper-focused on delivering a fantastic product to the quick-serve restaurant industry. It's a massive market, 50,000 drive-thrus, 250,000 restaurants. That's just in the United States. Prior to the pandemic, it was a $865 billion per year industry. So we could spend the rest of my career and just be touching on, you know, double digit penetration rates in the global restaurant industry because it is such a large market. Right now, I would say we'll spend the next couple of years in this space. We want to carve out a really nice market opportunity for ourselves. And I think that'll afford us kind of a beachhead where we'll be able to have a lot of great customers that we work with. We'll be generating a lot of data and a lot of revenue. And then I would assume after that, we would then look to start to branch into new industries.
So turning the table around for a second, right? Say if I am a franchise owner for a quick serve restaurant or someone who has a quick serve restaurant, thinking about dealing with employee shortages and all that, and now listening to this and thinking about maybe I can bring in AI, right? What advice would you give them? How should they start thinking about it? Where would be a good place to start with your solution?
Doing your due diligence, not all conversational AI is created equally. Most, if not all of it, is backed up by call center. Sometimes the call center gets involved 10% of the time. Sometimes the call center gets involved 90% of the time. And so I think people need to have those understandings of an AI's actual capabilities on the front side before they pick a vendor to work with. For Valiant, if anybody's interested in reaching out, feel free. You can find us at valiant.ai. You can contact me at rob@valiant.ai, even if you just want to bounce some questions around. Currently for us, you know, because right now we're facing a national labor shortage, within the restaurant industry, there's 1.7 million unfilled positions. One in every six job openings in the United States is for a restaurant position. We are really right now just focusing on restaurants that have 500 locations or more. But if you fit that mold, even if you're a franchisee, you know, then we'd be happy to talk to you about it. We hope to open up probably by next year our platform to make it more self-serve, where people can start to onboard themselves. And then we can start to work with chains that don't have that many locations yet. But right now we have to do something to bifurcate the market because the demand is so much greater than the available supply.
Now, in terms of your advice for aspiring entrepreneurs, and it seems like your sort of your experience as you talk through it sort of checks a lot of boxes. And then you may have it down to a method. What advice would you have for an aspiring entrepreneur, someone who's thinking about starting a next AI company or a technology company in any disruptive technology? What advice would you give them?
Not to be redundant, I'd probably loop back to our discussion earlier in the conversation. If you've never started a company and you are not an AI engineer, then I would highly recommend starting a service-based company first. AI is massively, massively difficult, and a lot of companies come and go and fail in this space. I think you need to understand the technology really well to succeed here. You need access to large amounts of capital to consistently support you over half a decade to a decade. You need to be lucky, whether it's market forces or things like server costs coming down, machine learning models getting better. You need a lot of things to go your way to start an AI company. And if you don't have that experience, I wouldn't recommend starting there, because I would say the chances of failure are high. If you are an engineer, you have experience in the AI world and you understand it and you can do a lot of the work yourself, at that point, I would say then go for it. But instead of trying to boil the ocean or go for some huge, large product, for example, self-driving cars, focus on something that's a little bit more niche, like a higher quality LiDAR system or better camera recognition. And maybe you don't even do all of the camera recognition. Maybe you just focus on doing embedded AI models for recognizing pedestrians, you know, and you have you have reaction times that are measured in milliseconds. You know, I would get really, really niched and specific if I was going to do it all over again and I was an AI engineer. But again, if you're not already an AI engineer, I would still recommend starting with a service-based company to get your feet underneath of you. And there's a lot of interesting applications for AI once you feel comfortable with it and raising the capital that can and will be applied to the economy and market around us.
That's great advice. Now, let me ask you a second advice. I'll ask sort of three advice. The second one would be, how do you sort of think about sort of when you thought about the minimum viable product and minimum viable product you should go out in the market with? Any advice there in terms of any parameters or metrics to think about and consider as they think about what is their minimum viable?
Yeah, I think AI just desperately needs data. And it's hard to artificially generate a lot of data yourself. So as soon as you feel like the product, you know, won't crash the system or infrastructure it's deployed in, I would get it into the market. Because you might think in a lab that other software or other users are going to interact with AI in one way. And what we've found is that's almost never the case when you actually get it into the market. People are unpredictable, systems are unpredictable, and they interact with something like AI that can have hard edges for failure in very different ways. So get to a point where you're not going to bring the system down that you're going to be putting the AI into. And then you just have to get it into the market and you have to see how people react to it. And maybe you need to pull it down and make changes and push it back. Or maybe the issues aren't big enough that you can do iterative improvements while it's in the market. Also, think about what your fallback is going to be. For conversational AI, every company in the space, whether they talk about it or not, has somebody in a call center somewhere that can step in if an order starts to go sideways. Self-driving cars. They either have somebody in the car that can take over when there's a problem, or they have somebody back at a remote operation center that can take over and drive the car if there's a problem. So also think about within the context of whatever system you're going to deploy your AI into, how can you back that system up so that there's redundancy so that if an unexpected edge case occurs, and they will, AI is only a business that is as good as the thousands or hundreds of thousands of edge cases that you can solve. So make sure that you have a way to have some redundancy if your system fails, because it will a lot, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, that's great advice. Now, moving to the advice on finding the first customer, right? How do you go about, okay, you're an engineer who has locked himself in a room for 6 months, build something, maybe you're a business guy who has found a few engineers and co-founders and built something interesting. Now you're ready and you have the MVP down. Now you're ready for the first customer. Any advice on how one should approach finding a customer?
Well, I would say right out of the gate that premise might be the wrong way to go about it, because what you have in that situation is a solution in search of a problem. You should always start with the problem first. Before you raise money, before you hire engineers, if you have an understanding of AI's capability, go out into the market and segment the market and then start talking to people in different segments. What I did when I was getting ready to start this company is I sat down and I brainstormed about 20 different industries where I thought this tech could work. And then I brainstormed another kind of 20 data points that I could judge an industry based on. What's the health of the industry? Is it growing or shrinking? What's the total revenue metrics for the industry? What's profitability for the industry? What's the, you know, potential impact from a market opportunity for this technology in an industry? Whatever you think your special sauce is for being able to analyze a market, analyze on as many different data points as you can and use that to try to grade and rank the biggest and best opportunity for your AI system. And then once you think you've identified a market and you think you've identified a problem that your AI could solve, then work really hard, either through networking or cold calls or outreach, to meet people in that industry and run your idea past them. Because when you're at the idea phase, ideas truly are a dime a dozen. So there's nothing wrong with throwing your idea against the real world and seeing what sticks and what doesn't stick. And then once you have identified who the potential market is and they're telling you that, yes, they want that product, that's when you start to build the product at that point. And if you really want to go for a home run, pre-sell those companies. If the problem you're solving is big enough, then they should be willing to invest some money up front to be able to get access to that solution. And that would be the best case scenario for selling your product and finding a market opportunity for it.
I love how you answered the question. And I'm so glad you did, because that's such an important thing and a lot of people miss. They get too excited about the product or the idea or the technology, and then they build it and hope they will come. But I love how you position it. I think it's a $1 million statement if people can remember and memorize it. If you're starting with an idea first and not the customer first, then you're starting it wrong, right? You're starting backwards. What you really need to do, and what I'm hearing, is you find the people that you're solving the problem for, solve it with them, and hopefully you get in through process, you get them excited enough where they will either invest in it or be the first people who saw it come to life and be there to use it. I love that.
Yeah, get them to put some skin in the game. Even if they don't give you cash to invest in the idea or to pre-buy the product, get them to sign a letter of intent. Get them to sign a contract. Again, AI is expensive. You need a lot of people working on it. And sometimes it takes years to get AI products right where they're ready for market. Get a company to sign a contract saying they'll use it, and then go and take that contract. And that's going to help you raise investor capital in the market, because now you're already coming with a predefined solution. People are, you know, at least putting their signature where their mouth is, saying that they really want the product. And that's going to really help you in that process. Plus, you can use those customers to ideate on the product itself. You can show them the prototype, the alpha build, the beta build, the MVP, you know, and you can get rapid and real-time feedback on the value. I mean, even though we had been already working on the technology for 4 years, last February was when we went live with a Checkers and Rallies franchisee down in Atlanta, Georgia. And we still learn massive amounts of things. And we got so much feedback and advice that it really helped us to refine the product and get it ready for primetime, and getting it ready to be a product that was not just tolerated or was okay, but a product that people loved, a product that people wanted, a product where there was word of mouth and new customers were reaching out because they heard, oh, hey, I heard so-and-so has your product and it's going great. I really want it too. How can I get it? That's kind of the momentum that you want to see in the market. Knowing a lot of AI businesses, I have firsthand accounts on a lot of people that think they had a good idea and built a product, and then they spend years and substantial portions of their equity raising capital going out and chasing and looking for a problem that their pre-built solution will solve. You don't want to get into that kind of a trap, because you may ultimately run out of money and investor interest before you find the true problem to your solution. Always, always, always start with the problem first, then back that into a solution.
Rob, this was awesome. I think there were some great, great gold nuggets here that our listeners can take away from this conversation. And super happy to see you so successful and your company growing, and we can definitely use more of that. Congratulations on all the success, and thank you for taking the time to be on our show. It was super, super informational.
I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed being here. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. If you like what you heard and are interested in more, visit us online at brainsbehind.ai and sign up for my monthly AI startup tracker. That's where I cut through the noise and bring you AI startups that are making tangible progress. Till next time, go out, be the brains behind AI.